Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Kee Chan. I'm a faculty at UIC, University of Illinois Chicago, so welcome to Chicago. Hope everyone's able to enjoy the warm weather, or warmer weather than a couple days ago, and the sunny weather we have temporarily. So definitely try to enjoy some of Chicago. I'm very delighted to have this opportunity to share one of my passions in research is newborn screening, specifically looking at the policy behind genetic testing. I've been working in the field of newborn screening for about 15 years and have made a transition from a bench scientist to a policymaker, and specifically looking at designing cost-effectiveness analysis using medical decision models to really help policymakers, stakeholders, physicians, and also many consumer groups how to make informed decisions. I was very delighted on Friday, October 30th, right before Halloween, that I came across on my porch the Wall Street Journal, and on the front page, it focuses on the article on the one-child policy in China and how this new policy is having tremendous impact on other areas in health, economics, and other very important decisions that needs to be made at a governmental level in China that can have ripple effect throughout the globe. And I'm going to talk about some of these issues that was presented in the Wall Street Journal, as well as how it can impact newborn screening. I'm going to give you some of the current events that's happening around newborn screening, specifically in the context of the one-child policy, now that has changed to the two-child policy. Giving you the history of why this one-child policy first was instated. Many countries might think that this seems to be a very restrictive, almost very dictatorship type of policy, that how can you impose family values? Well, there was a lot of reasoning that went along in this implementation in the 1980s. And there were some pros and cons to this one-child policy, which looking back, I think in some cases it was a good policy. But now the challenges that is presented from this paper, as well as what I'm going to talk about in this lecture in terms of newborn screening, is that has now some limitation to this new policy. And why the change now? And how does this have an impact? And also, let's think back, is it too late? This is the map of China. In 2020, when they did a consensus, China has the largest world population of 1.34 billion individuals. If you notice the map, on the right side, which is the eastern region of China, which I'm going to refer to, so make sure you remember how this map looks like, you notice that the provinces are a bit smaller, right? And these are considered more of the city, encompasses more of the city-like and westernized culture. And as you move toward the middle, the provinces are a little bit larger, right? And then as you move toward the west side, the provinces are larger in size. So not only is the geographic of the provinces are quite different, but you can see that there's a pattern, but that also explains that the welfare distribution across China is going to vary. As you can imagine, on the east side, which is a lot more of the city-like places, are going to have a higher economic basis as compared to the middle and to the western region. In addition to looking at the population, let's look at the way maternal child health services are distributed around China. On the right side, which is the eastern region of China, you notice that the regions have these dots. The dots represent 75 to 100% of the populations of the regions have birth being delivered in the hospital, which is mostly on the eastern region, which is mostly a lot of the cities. And now if you slowly move toward the middle, you notice that you start seeing lines that are slanted, and less of the regions that are in dots. That represents 50 to 75% of births take place in a hospital. Now you slowly move to the middle. You start seeing lines are vertical. That represents about 25 to 50% of the births that happens in hospitals. And as you move toward the western region, you start seeing more horizontal and less of the different legends. We represent 0 to 25% of births happens in the hospitals. And as you look at the regions surrounding the western border, it's mostly blank. This represents that there is either very difficult to collect data or it's very, very rural areas. And a lot of the rural areas prefer to have more home births and midwives and more of a very family, maybe more of a family-type knitted type of birth delivery where maybe the grandmother will help deliver the baby. And there might be some suspicions about the city and the hospital. And they, you know, although they could go to the more middle and to the eastern side to get birth delivery health cares, but most of the families tend to reside where they are. So in 2011, there was a study that showed that 185 screening units, which takes place throughout the region in China, it varies depending upon location based on the wealth of the province, where they conduct all the maternal child health type of services. This include a maternal screening as well as prenatal screening, newborn screening, and also like postpartum screening. In this study, it shows that roughly about 35% of the births were screened. So in China, there's 16 million babies born, as compared to the US, which is about 4 million babies. That's 4 times the birth rate every year. And in 2011, it showed that they did a study retrospectively before 2011, was that 35% of the babies in China was screened, has now moved up to 50%, which is a tremendous increase of percentage of babies being screened. But that means half of the babies, which is 16 million, half, means that 8 million babies are not screened. Where are these babies? If you notice the location of where the hospital's births occur, which is mostly on the eastern side, you can imagine that is it all clustered in the middle, in the western side, where these babies have this lost, missed opportunity of getting screened, getting care. So there's a lot of current issues current exists, and with this new change in policy, you can imagine there will be a lot of different issues that we need to also consider. So change is good if planned well. That's what I believe. The policy change, which is from the one-child policy to now the two-child policy, the policymakers have made a projection that because of the one-child policy, over the last 3 decades, there was 4 million births prevented. So looking back at the policy that I said, that why did they do this policy? Well, you can imagine that this region of where birth delivery is occurring, maybe it was a good thing that this policy was enacted because 400 births were prevented. Then on the other hand, there's another issue, and this is the reason why they're changing this policy. They're making it open for families to have 2 children. This is on the Wall Street Journal, and I mentioned that was published on October 30th. If you look at the graph, this is before the change in the policy. So they projected that by the year 2020, you start to see the decline of the working age population, which is estimated between 16 to 65 years old. This is the reason why they're making the change, because they realize that the young generation needs to increase to replace the working class that's going to be aging out. The history of the one-child policy. Let's just rewind back why this all started in the first place. In 1980, it was in place to control the population growth. So at that point, it was a good idea because now looking back, we prevented about 400 million births. However, during this time of 30 decades, a lot of unintended consequences occurred. Abortion, increased rate of abortion, especially if they knew that it was going to be a daughter versus a son. You can see there's a lot of increase of abortion. Sterilization, a lot of women decided to go back to their workplace and didn't want to compete with this age during the maternal age, so they oftentimes went to sterilization just so that they didn't want to make that choice. But this also led to the imbalance of family, and this is actually why we see the decline in working age, is that the ratio of adults to child is 6 to 1. You have a male and female has a child, so that's 2 people, right? Then the maternal size grandparents, those are the grandparents, that's 4. The grandparents of the maternal is another 2. So 6 people are taking care of 1 child. So you can see that this has been a growing issue over time. The growing class is the working age population is drastically shrinking, and it's been estimated by the UN that by the year 2030, China will lose 67 million workers. What would this have on the impact of global economy? If we looked at our watches or clothes, everything says made in China, right? So you can see that not only is this policy is going to have an impact on newborn screening, but it also has an impact from the extreme timeline, right? The working class is that we're going to maybe be challenged about how the economy is going to be affected by this. Will we have less material made in China? Would this increase the prices of imports and exports? These are other unintended consequences when you have these policies. The LA population is expected to grow to 110 million. In 2010, and in the year 2030, it will grow to 210 million, it's twice, right, in a couple decades. So not only are we dealing with the working class declining, we also need to also think about elderly care, right, which is also the aging care here in the United States. Also, there's a lot of challenges here, just so it's a global challenge in general. So in 2013, the one-child policy was lifted, and this was to increase the new generation, the baby boost. Well, what is newborn screening? So I've been talking about this newborn screening, and what it is that it was a technology that was developed in 1960 to detect for early detection of metabolic disorders and genetic disorders that can be ameliorated early on so that early treatment could be most beneficial. In the early 1960s, or actually in early 1955, was that this test really helped change the landscape of genetic testing. PKU, phenylketonuria, was the first metabolic disorder that was screened in Massachusetts, and from that onwards, a couple years later, a couple other metabolic disorders were also added to the panel. As of now, in 2015, United States, we screened for over 50 metabolic disorders. Now, 5 years before that, we weren't that great. There was a lot of disparities in how newborn screening programs were administrating the tests throughout the U.S. So even though the U.S. has now progressed, you know, back then it was very similar to like other countries like China, which they only had a couple of disorders being screened. The reason why I think the U.S. was also able to make this such a great progression in implementing screening was not only the financial mean, but they had a structure, an infrastructure, where they had an advisory board that made these recommendations to different state agencies and then to the government to support newborn screening nationally. And these are some of the recommendations we would also, at the end of this presentation, that we would like you to consider as a possible way to ameliorate the impact of the change of the one-child policy. So how would the new policy, which is a change from the one-child policy, affect newborn screening? So in China, newborn screening is quite interesting. It currently only screens for two disorders. It screens for phenylketonuria, PKU, and congenital hypothyroidism. These two metabolic disorders are about 1 in 10,000 individuals. So one out of every 10,000 births, usually you would find someone who has one of these disorders. The treatment has been shown to be very beneficial when it is given within a couple of weeks of life. So, for example, congenital hypothyroidism is through thyroid hormone replacement, and also with PKU, if the dietary changes, you can actually prevent mental retardation, seizures, and physical disability. These are really life-changing consequences, right? The benefits of screening. Now, even though these are great benefits, not everyone can enjoy these benefits, because in China, a lot of these screening programs are somewhat supported by the government, but mostly it is out of pocket. And with the shrink, and then if you notice from the map of China, the provinces, the geographic, and the wealth distribution is not equal. The screening test can cost about $8 to $25 US dollars. However, if you notice, majority of the population in China lives with a salary about $6,800 annual salary. and about 128 million of Chinese still live below the poverty level of $1.80 per day. Now you ask a family, how are they able to afford newborn screening, right? So these are really pressing issues that currently exist, and even with this change in policy, which is great, but we're gonna, can you imagine the double of children or babies that are gonna need this type of resources? So these are a lot of issues that we need to consider when you make these type of policy changes. Other current issues to think about in the context of newborn screening in China is the disconnect in terms of how follow-up is done. So even if the places that do offer screening, how are the treatment being distributed? Now, if you have a family going into, so what happens is a lot of families in the rural areas do take the mother into the city for the month, knowing that will be roughly when they're going to give birth. Then they go back to the rural area. How are they going to follow up with the treatment? How are they going to get the results? So in the cities, what they've done is that since there's a lot of people, there's internet, they actually develop a central web portal where people can log on, get the results of the newborn screening, whether it's positive or negative. If it's positive, they would get treatment and there would be a management of care. If it's negative, then they know, all right, baby's fine. Now, there was a study in 2010 that showed that only 1.7% of the population in China actually has internet. That's pretty amazing, right? So how are people going to get their results if they don't have access to internet? And you can either get it by text or cell phone, but if majority of people are living off of $1.80 per day, it's going to be very challenging. So even if you have infrastructure and there's a will for good, there needs to be other programmatic local level changes in order to make this happen, even though we implement this policy change. We suggested that we use a logic model-based type of recommendation. I worked with my graduate student who's actually from mainland China, and this is one of her interests here, and she's going to be moving back to China and hopefully be able to make these type of changes and some of the ideas that we've talked about from this project. So using a logic model is a program evaluation type of tool that allows the policymaker to evaluate the resources they have, how the resources, their inputs, are able to be consumed by the project, right? How does it support the project? And then what are the activities that can be sort of supported by the resources? And what are the intended outputs? Like these are the actual activities, these activity-based outputs. And from these outputs, what's the overall outcome? So in newborn screening, it would be early screening, and then those who are detected with disease is to get treatment. And then from treatment, they'll get follow-up, and there'll be a management of care. And the impact is to improve public health and policy and to improve child health development. So using our logic model, which we developed, and highlighting all the different inputs, I'm just going to highlight the aspect that we thought that's most pressing that we need to solve in the context of newborn screening in the context of the new change in the policy. And these are very research emphasis. It's to first assess the current capacity of hospitals and screening centers. So you notice that from the map, the eastern borders are where the cities are, and that's where majority of the birth hospitals, a lot of the births are taking place in the hospital. So those would be probably, first what we look at, okay, what's the current capacity in those hospitals? Are they actually at 100% rate of having mothers getting their children screened and follow up? Now, if there's challenges in those eastern regions, then you can imagine that it can be a lot harder in the middle and eastern region. So first, understand what's the capacity in the current hospitals. If they're doing a great job, maybe we can model. If they're not, then we need to make these changes. And then to think about how we are going to reallocate these resources to meet the demand of newborn screening, and to have follow-up services that's available to them promptly and perhaps geographically. With the work of telemedicine, maybe we could take advantage of that. But again, since the internet penetration is only about 2%, that might be difficult. So while we're in the area of digital health, we're really excited about that, we also have to look back that maybe not everyone is benefiting for that. what are the financial investment and prioritization of funds, medical service, and the infrastructures that support it locally and governmentally? And the leadership and management. Even if you have a change of a policy, this one child to two child policy, if local infrastructure is not supporting this and there's no leader to implement these changes, it's very difficult for families to even support this new idea. And so we suggested perhaps there could be an independent board advisor that's very similar to the U.S. that could make these recommendations as to compare to what the current status is, that all these recommendations are being made by the Ministry of Health. And to understand the cost-effectiveness analysis and newborn screening for diseases, because even though some countries are screening multiple diseases, up to 50 disorders, and in some countries are considering genome sequencing in newborns and exome sequencing, the question still remains, what's the cost benefits behind screening and the information you're gonna get? Would it change the course of the baby's life? And with expansion and implementation, it's very important that we still maintain quality control and assurances for families that this is done in the right way. Current challenges, again, will be the need of a global will, political will, to make these changes to support local families. So in addition to the baby that we have to care for, is that we also have to keep in mind that the Asian population, because even with the one-child policy lifted, China's become the world's largest old-age home. So something also to think about, two different spectrums. So thank you for your time. I'll be happy to answer questions afterwards.